Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Industry Leaders. Water and Energy Conference Attracts the Experts by Ruth Campbell. Complete with high-powered speakers, the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference kicks off February 28th and runs through March 2nd. A welcome reception will be held February 28th at the University of Texas Basin College of Engineering Building. The actual conference is March 1st and 2nd at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena and Pavilion, 2514 Arena Trail. A keynote dinner will be March 1st at the Petroleum Club in Midland. UTPB Vice President for Student Affairs and Leadership, Becky Spurlock, said this will be the first time the welcome reception has been held at the engineering building. "We're excited about having it there," Spurlock said. Richard Brantley, this year's conference chair, said they're expecting between 300 and 400 people to attend. "That's in the middle of the road. We've had more than that, but I think that's what I'm anticipating," said Brantley, who is Senior Vice President of Operations at University Lands. There is no designated theme, but the panels and speakers will talk about contemporary concerns about produced water management. Brantley noted that this is not a produced water conference, but one that covers broader water issues. The contemporary concerns we're dealing with are beneficial reuse of produced water, how we can grow that percentage, and then certainly seismicity, which may result from injection, is another concern. I think somebody said it well the other day, that the Midland-Odessa community is wide awake about the seismic occurrences as you've experienced and we've all experienced, Brantley said. They will also be enhancing collaboration. "We're trying to grow the body of knowledge and increase our collective wisdom about the best ways to manage water across the arid Permian Basin," he said. Spurlock noted that one of the more prominent features of the conference is its incredible lineup of speakers, such as industry experts and government leaders. "We've been able to really put together a portfolio of speakers that take a wide and long look at these issues, and this year is no different. We're very thrilled to have Mike Summers, who is the president and CEO of the American Petroleum Institute, providing our keynote," Spurlock said. They will also have Emily Lindley, a Texas Commission on Environmental Quality commissioner, Brooke Pomp, the chairwoman of the Texas Water Development Board, and Mike Hightower, program director of the New Mexico Produced Water Research Consortium. Representatives from Texas A&M AgriLife and the Department of Energy, as well as the Texas Railroad Commission, are also expected. "Something I think could be beneficial to the public knowledge is this conference is held by UTPB and the John Ben Shepherd Leadership Institute. All the net proceeds from this conference go back to the university to support the leadership and education efforts of Permian Basin students," Brantley said. "When we talk to potential sponsors, when you describe to them how it's really a direct effort to educate the future oil and gas professionals that are going to be the next generation here in the Permian Basin, people that live here want to be here. You can just see and kind of straighten up and brighten up about the whole concept. It's not just, okay, here's another conference," he added. Spurlock noted that students are invited to take part. "We have students participate in many different ways. We have for a while now sponsored a poster contest where students can showcase their research that's related to this industry. Those students also compete for cash prizes, so it's a way that students can receive additional funding by showcasing their work," she said. "That program has continued to grow year over year. Students also are invited to participate in different portions of the conference. So, for example, many students also are going to class, so they may come in between. We're facilitating their participation at lunches so that they can meet industry experts and have conversations. They'll be at the different receptions and meals. We actually continue to find more and more ways to involve students in the whole process. We get great feedback from both sides," Spurlock said. Asked about whether the conference would look at creating more potable water, Brantley said that's where all the mine power is going these days, is how we can utilize this water to a higher and better purpose. some of the water is too salty for agriculture use. You can purify it with desalinization and distillation, but it's a cost per barrel equation that kind of meets you dead on, Brantley said. He noted that fracking volumes have gone up over the years when shale kicked up here around 2009-2010. The frack volumes were 200,000 barrels a day. They continued to grow due to observations that the more water we put down, the better the wells are. So general volume these days is about 700,000 barrels per completed oil well. It's significant, but again, not to worry the public too much, if you compare the oil and gas industry's water needs to agriculture, it's a pretty small slice of the pie chart, Brantley said. We're used to seeing agriculture being irrigated, and we don't think anything about it, but it utilizes far, far more water as far as the frack volumes. That's kind of where that process has occurred, and it's plateaued at about 700,000. It's been that way for the last year and a half or two. I don't really foresee that growing much more, but every day, a new idea. So we'll see, he added. Brantley said the Department of Energy has done a tremendous amount of work on this. They're going to give a presentation, and then the produced water consortiums from New Mexico, both Dr. Hightower and then from Lubbock over at Texas Tech, Rusty Smith, they're all going to be there, and of course, Senator Charles Perry of Lubbock is the strong champion for what we can do with all this water, he said. Both Spurlock and Brantley are looking forward to the event. Last year was her first year working closely and participating in the conference. Obviously, I'm outside the industry, but work at the university, and I've learned so much. I've found it interesting. I'm very much excited to continue participation and bringing more and more people into the conference to learn and grow together, Spurlock said. There's so much to celebrate in this year. We have excellent sponsors. We've had great support from the community. We've had a lot of interest, and the interest in the conference continues to grow in terms of individuals interested. Companies interested, but also people interested, from geographically inside and outside the Permian Basin, she added. Brantley said many of the attendees will be from the Permian Basin, but people will also come from Houston, New Mexico, and perhaps Oklahoma. There have also been international attendees. As the conversation goes internationally, everybody wants to be doing something in the Permian, so it wouldn't surprise me to see contingents from foreign countries also. This whole deal was incubated by Jim Woodcock. I've worked with Jim for 30-plus years in various businesses. He's just a very diligent and effective person. This year, they asked me to chair this conference, and I'm very pleased to follow his footsteps for sure, Brantley said. Spurlock said they will be honoring Woodcock at the keynote dinner in recognition of founding the conference and his contributions and long service to the oil and gas industry. They're finalizing the agenda, but some of the additional featured speakers are Lee Fuller, Independent Petroleum Association of America officer, Environment and General Strategy. Katie Smy, Bureau of Economic Geology Geoscientist. Marcus Druven, Department of Energy Produced Water Optimization Technical Director. Katie Lewis, Texas A&M AgriLife Research Associate Professor. Paul Dubois, Railroad Commission of Texas Assistant Director of Technical Permitting, Oil and Gas Division. And Kelly Bennett, B3 Insight co-founder and CEO. Also, Mike Dyson, Infinity Water Solutions CEO. Sam Sledge, Pro Petro Services CEO. Brady Murphy, Tetra Technologies President and CEO. Robert Crane, Texas Pacific Water Resources Executive VP. And Jake Hendricks, Renovo Resources Senior Director of Business Development. Top sponsors include XTO Energy, Diamondback Platinum, NGL Water Solutions Platinum, and Goodnight Midstream Platinum. Bright Stars Memorial Moving Forward by Ruth Campbell. The campus transformation at University of Texas Permian Basin is likely to take 3 years, and its priority is the Bright Stars Memorial, which will be completed sooner. This landmark will be a place for the Permian Basin community to gather and reflect while enhancing the university's campus transformation efforts, which coincide with UTPB's 50th anniversary, the UTPB website details. It also marks the August 31st, 2019 mass shooting. The design work is coming along beautifully, President Sandra Woodley said. We're working right now on the memorial to finalize the design, working with the artist, working with the architectural firm, getting all the information to try to make sure that we've got that ready to go as quickly as we can. Then, of course, we've got to get the construction teams involved, and that'll take a little time to be able to go through the process, to be able to go out and get the construction team that will actually be doing the work. We're hoping to be able to get shovel in the ground in the next several months, Woodley added. It's hoped by the end of the spring, work will be occurring. It always takes longer than you think to get all those pieces together, but the design is beautiful. The art piece is ready to go up. We hope to have the ceremony for the Bright Stars Memorial in August at the site. We know it won't be completely finished, but it should be finished enough that we can have the community out there to view the artwork and see the end result, Woodley said. Asked whether there would be another event like the one in August to commemorate the mass shooting, Chief of Staff Tatum Hubbard said there is a committee working on that, headed by Odessa Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Renee Earls. The same entities that came together last time will come together this time, and I think there's a plan to make it even more significant. So multiple days of community involvement around this, Hubbard said. She added that one of the driving forces behind this is Kelby Davis, whose daughter was injured in the shooting. She really feels passionately that we have to find some light in that tragedy. She wants to involve community service and reflection and being much more purposeful. There have been some really good conversations, and I think it would culminate in another event, probably a sunrise event on our campus, Hubbard said. The memorial itself is complete, but there is still work to do on the surroundings. The art is a cylinder with light that emanates over a plaza, Woodley said, but the plaza isn't built yet. The memorial will be 11 feet high and 5 feet in diameter, Executive Director of Odessa Arts Randy Hamm said in a text message. The cylinder itself is not much use until you get the plaza together and all of the pieces so that you can actually appreciate the end result and of the impact of that art, Woodley said. The memorial will be on a rise so you can see it around the community. You'll have the plaza be places for people to sit in and view the art, Woodley said. Woodley said they don't want to place the art until they have the ground prepared and the plaza completed. It won't be completely finished by next August, but we hope to be able to have at least part of the plaza in place and the artwork itself so that we can have the memorial there, she said. The campus transformation also includes signage, the quad, and the trails. Most of it will be done in the first year or two, but it's going to take a little bit longer to get all of the pieces together. In addition to the campus transformation, we're programming to complete renovation of the Mesa building itself. For the next 3 years, we'll have lots of fun work ahead of us to fully transform this campus and this building, Woodley said. We also have the fundraising efforts to be able to provide some additional funds. We don't have enough to complete all of the design that we have for the campus transformation and the building, but we're prioritizing our projects right now and working with the community and potential donors to really optimize the work that we're going to be doing for the community on our campus, she said. ERCOT provides new extended forecast of grid conditions. As part of continued efforts to increase transparency into grid operations, ERCOT announced on Friday a new 6-day forecast on the supply and demand dashboard that will provide Texans with an extended view of upcoming grid conditions. Like an extended weather forecast, the new 6-day forecast dashboard provides an indication of future conditions on the grid for 6 days beyond the current operating day. Dan Woodfin, ERCOT Vice President of System Operations, stated in the press release. While the supply and demand forecasts may change, as weather forecasts do, the dashboard provides a general heads up on the supply-demand trends based on currently known information. The supply and demand dashboard displays ERCOT system's current power supply, capacity, and demand using real-time data, as well as projected power supply, capacity, and demand from hourly forecasts and other best available sources. The six-day forecast supply and demand dashboard is accessible from the grid and market conditions page at tinyurl.com/2H656RTR. Abbott and HHSC announce final extension of emergency SNAP benefits. Austin. Governor Greg Abbott announced on Friday the Texas Health and Human Services Commission is providing more than $345.9 million in emergency supplemental nutrition assistance program food benefits for the month of February as the final extension of benefits. Congress recently passed legislation to establish February 2023 as the last month eligible households can receive emergency SNAP benefits. The allotments are expected to help about 1.6 million Texas households. The state of Texas has been able to help millions of families across our great state access the food they need to stay healthy, Abbott stated in the press release. We're proud to have provided billions of dollars in supplemental benefits so Texans could have healthy and nutritious food options to take care of their families and loved ones. We're thankful that we've been able to help millions of Texans by providing more than $9.7 billion in additional benefits since the family's first Coronavirus Response Act was passed. HHSC Access and Eligibility Services Deputy Executive Commissioner Wayne Salter stated in the press release. HHSC received federal approval from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to extend the maximum allowable amount of SNAP benefits to recipients based on family size. All SNAP households will receive a minimum of $95 in emergency allotments. This additional emergency allotment should appear in recipients' accounts by February 28th. OPD reports finding drugs. An Odessa couple was arrested last week on a felony drug charge after detectives found 100 grams of methamphetamine, a digital scale, and baggies in their possession. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives were outside the Executive Inn on East 2nd Street January 27th when they saw Paul Ferry and Deborah Jackson Jennings leave a room and get into a Nissan Altima. Detectives pulled them over, and when they smelled marijuana coming from the car, searched it. The drugs and paraphernalia were found in a backpack inside the car, the report stated. Ferry and Jackson Jennings were arrested on suspicion of manufacturing delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years to life in prison. They are both being held in the Ector County Jail on a U.S. Marshal's hold and a $75,000 surety bond. Man accused of shooting dog and ag assault. An Odessa man was arrested early Monday morning after he was accused of breaking into a house threatening to kill a man and killing a dog. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 call around 4:20 a.m. about a man with a gun in the 1300 block of North Lincoln Avenue. When officers arrived, Damon Simpson, 53, told officers a 21-year-old man was inside his residence and he wasn't supposed to be, the report stated. Simpson reported the man tried to attack him, so he went and got a gun out of his friend's car. He told the officers he had shot a pit bull when the dog attacked him as he was trying to get inside the house. However, the younger man told officers Simpson had been evicted from the home more than a year ago, and he lived in the house. According to the report, he and Simpson broke through the front door with a pistol, threatened to shoot him, and then shot his dog through a window after he was able to shut the door, leaving Simpson outside. Simpson was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, discharging a firearm certain municipalities, and being a felon in possession of a firearm. The assault charge is a second-degree felony, punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. The felon in possession charge is a third-degree felony, punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. Simpson remains in the Ector County Jail on surety bonds totaling $53,000 and a U.S. Marshal's hold. OPD to hold memorial for Scott Smith. the Odessa Police Department is hosting a wreath-laying ceremony to pay tribute to Officer Scott Smith, who died in a motorcycle crash while responding to a burglary in progress call at sunrise on Monday. The public is invited to attend the wreath-laying ceremony. The wreath will be on display from sunrise to sunset, and anyone wishing to show the respects is encouraged to visit our memorial during this time. Senator Sparks calls for power realignment. Overemphasis on renewable energy has put Texas in a bind, he says. By Bob Campbell, Austin. Representing 930,000 people in the enormous 31st Senatorial District from the Permian Basin to Amarillo and the Texas High Plains, newly sworn-in State Senator Kevin Sparks wants to help secure the state's energy grid by building more natural gas-fired plants and developing more nuclear power generation. Just getting started in the 88th legislature, the Midland Republican said in a wide-ranging interview with the Odessa American that the state has dilly-dallied long enough with renewable energy. One thing that's got to happen is to rebalance the market parameters and encourage the creation of dispatchable power, which means I can fire this thing up and be operating electricity in 15 or 20 minutes, as opposed to intermittent power like wind and solar, Sparks said. For the last 20 years, federal subsidies have distorted the power generation market into wind and solar, so there has not been the financial incentive for industry to go in and construct any other type of generation. We need more natural gas-fired generation, and we need to look at creating additional nuclear baseload. When you look at this grid, you know that we have X amount of need that runs all the time, and we have times when we require more power, like between 2 and 7 p.m. in the summer. That's when this dispatchable power is needed. Sparks, an oil man, said Texas's energy industry is moving well, but its leaders must plan for the future. We're still short on experienced workers, and we've got to get better on the education front from K through 12 and in upper-level education to help our students understand the career paths for working in the oil and natural gas industry, he said. Asked his view of the gas market, where the price has stayed untenably low for months, Sparks said it has to rebound eventually, and when that happens, my expectation is that we will continue to see the market strengthen. Beginning his first four-year term, the senator had been favorably impressed with the bill filed by Republican Representative James Frank of Wichita Falls to improve the state's foster care system. Attempts have been made for years to streamline foster care, but there has been very little positive outcome, he said. My hope and goal is to get it out of the state bureaucracy and back into the communities. Sparks was encouraged by his appointments by Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick to the Texas Committees of Health and Human Services, Natural Resources and Economic Development, Veterans Affairs, Water, Agriculture, and Rural Affairs, and Nominations, of which he is the vice chairman. I'm pleased about all these committees, he said. I had asked for most of them because they line up with the issues that are important to our district. When I campaigned across the whole district, it was evident that all the constituents were very like-minded. Some Senate districts are partly rural and partly metro, and our rural communities function a lot differently than the metro communities. Odessa American Obituaries, published Saturday, February 4th. Harold Dean Kirk, Odessa. Harold Dean Kirk of Odessa passed away Saturday, January 28th in Odessa. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, February 2nd at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Funeral services will be held Friday, February 3rd at 2 p.m. at Central Baptist Church, 1416 Texas, Odessa, Texas, with Reverend Bonnie Taylor officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Harold was born in Shaw, Mississippi to James and Lucille Kirk on June 17, 1942. He married Linda Sue Beeman May 5, 1965. After the passing of his wife Sue in 2006, he married Judy Cosper. Harold is preceded in death by his parents James and Lucille Kirk, his wife Linda Sue Beeman, his brother Joseph Kirk, and nephew Scott Kirk. Harold is survived by his wife Judy Cosper Kirk of Odessa, his son James J. Kirk and wife Heather of Odessa, daughters Kay Adams and husband Gerald of Pearland, Texas, Kelly Tardy and husband Durand of Spring, Texas, grandchildren Amber Lopez and husband Melvin, Caitlin and Lauren Adams, Allison Ritter and husband Carson, Keely O'Connell and husband Cameron, Tiffany Bowen and husband Matt, plus great-grandchildren. The family wishes to extend their sincere thanks and appreciation to Jerry and Vicki Wells and JC and Sela Stone for their kindness and friendship. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notice from Saturday. Ellen Barker Lutz, Midland. Ellen Barker Lutz, 58 of Midland, died Saturday, January 21st in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements made by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading from the Odessa American, published Sunday, February 5th. Front page. Oil spokesmen analyze Saudi Arabia. Edwards and Richards say Middle East oil kingpin's independence grows. By Bob Campbell. The time has passed when Saudi Arabia was a trusted ally of the United States, but that doesn't dispense with the need to find new ways of working with the Middle Eastern oil dynasty. Odessa oil man Kirk Edwards and Permian Basin International Oil Show President Larry Richards say Saudi Arabia's heft in the global energy industry makes a relationship unavoidable. They can crash the oil price by putting too much oil on the market, or, as they're doing right now, keep the world price around $80 a barrel by limiting the amount of crude that's coming onto the market from OPEC and OPEC Plus, Edwards said. The Biden administration has been very negative towards Saudi Arabia, which does not bode well for a good relationship with them. Edwards said the Saudis' dealings with their customers in Asia and Europe are much more positive than the industrial and political business they do in America. They don't supply much, if any, oil to us, and what they do provide goes into their 100% owned Motiva Enterprises refinery on the Texas Gulf Coast, he said. Asked how Saudi Arabia's tensions with Iran are affecting global politics, Edwards said the Middle East will always be in turmoil. The only certainty there is uncertainty on a yearly basis. Israel was bombing facilities inside Iran over the weekend, and that will cause some kind of response from Iran. I do think one concern of the European countries and the Biden administration is the close ties Saudi Arabia has with Russia, because the Saudis have clearly stated that they will do what is good for their own sovereign country. They are very independent and becoming even more so. Edwards said the Biden administration must deal with Saudi Arabia to get their sour crude oil it needs to refill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which the administration drained of 180 million barrels last year to help lower the price of gasoline before the fall elections. The SPR now holds 405 million barrels in four deep underground storage caverns that were created in salt domes along the Texas and Louisiana Gulf Coasts. Its capacity is 714 million gallons. It was very short-sighted of the administration to do that because we don't have enough sour crude in this country to refill the SPR, Edwards said. The cocktail mix in the reserve is two-thirds sweet crude and a third sour crude because American refineries are built to run on that mix. Richard said Saudi Arabia once kept up a facade of cordiality toward the U.S., but its true feeling has always been one of hostility and contempt. As the U.S. recalibrates our long-term relationship with the Saudi government, we should do so with our eyes wide open, Richard said. While our improving relationship with Israel and steadfast animosity towards the Iranian regime are beneficial to U.S. interests, they are not our friends. One could make the case that the spread of the fundamentalist Wahhabi version of the Sunni Muslim faith across the globe, with funding from both the Saudi royal family and the government itself, has caused as much damage to the U.S. and our allies as democratic values as the fundamentalist Shia Muslim clerics in Iran. Richards reported visiting Saudi Arabia and seeing the malice that many of its people held for America. There is a reason that the majority of the 9/11 hijackers who slammed planes into the World Trade Center were from Saudi Arabia, he said. I have many good friends who are Muslim, and I have a great deal of respect for their religion. However, the Saudi Wahhabi version of that religion teaches hatred of America and Western values while gladly accepting our military protection and oil monies. Richard was a presenter at the International Experts Forum on Carbon Management at Khobar in 2015, which was sponsored by the Global Methane Initiative and the Saudi Aramco Oil Company. I had an opportunity to meet the Saudi oil minister and even participate in a Saudi sword dance, he said. While the government and Aramco folks I met were very polite and professional, I have never traveled anywhere else in the world where I felt so unwelcome by the general population simply because I was an American. The hostile stares and glaring groups of young men were bizarre and disconcerting, and they led me to spend many hours researching what was actually taught in the Saudi madrasas or religious schools. The five-star hotel we stayed in had an armored military vehicle parked under a camo net at the entrance, locked and loaded with a machine gun mounted on top, and security personnel checked the undersides of our vehicles with mirrors for bombs when we entered and exited. I've been many places where I feared potential kidnapping or robbery, but never anywhere I've felt the risk of my life from the general population simply because I was an American. Richards had always considered Saudi Arabia an American ally, but it became clear that the Saudi government hadn't portrayed the U.S. that way. Tensions were high during our trip because shortly before the conference, the wife of the U.S. ambassador was struck by one of the religious police, he said. She had been shopping in the local market wearing the appropriate hijab and the modest dress, but when she reached over to pick something from a stall, her dress lifted slightly and exposed her ankle. One of the religious police minders immediately struck her hard in the ankle with his staff, sending her to the ground wailing and her security detail jumping to intervene before any more justice was delivered. I only share this story because I think it illustrates the challenges in dealing with an ally whose values and beliefs more closely resemble the Middle Ages than 2023 America. ECISD facing vouchers and talent searches. Personnel quests, possible vouchers on the horizon, and the bond committee at work. There's a lot going on in the Ector County ISD. Recently, some top executives have left ECISD for Midland ISD. Superintendent Scott Murray said they are promotion opportunities for talented people in the district. When you're looking around and trying to find talented people in your own organization, you're going to search elsewhere. Even Russell Tippin, president and CEO of Medical Center Hospital, took our human resource person. That's where Stacy Ashley went to, Murray said. We've done some good work and it's gotten some folks some recognition, he said. Their talents are valued and these are promotion opportunities, he said. To me, that's great, Murray said. Now the search is on. Our folks are going to come from somewhere too. That's one opportunity we have in this area, beyond just education, is finding talented people, Murray said. He added that you hear similar things from the oil and gas industry, and you see the help wanted ads in the area. Everybody's looking for quality people, so we just have to continue to do a good job of attracting people to our area, but also cultivating our own talent, Murray said. When people come from elsewhere, they may leave the basin fast. Sometimes that happens. When you find a talented person and you bring them into your organization, you want to leverage them and their abilities for as long as you possibly can, Murray said. Certainly, you want your culture and climate to hold on to them. In education, one of the things that helps us hold on to great teachers are the parents and the way moms and dads take care of their child's teacher. Believe it or not, that makes a difference, and whether or not teachers stay is how they're treated within our own community, by our own people. Certainly, compensation is something we have to pay attention to. We're the highest paying teacher district right now, and that certainly helps us attract people to our area. But they don't have roots. That can be challenging. Moving to a different part of the state or the nation, and you don't have family or friends. We want to be their work family, too. It's making sure people have connections. At the end of the day, you want to take advantage of talented people as long as you can. But talented people can cycle through opportunities. Everybody recognizes talent, Murray said. The committee to formulate a recommendation to the ECISD Board of Trustees met for the first time last week. It consists of 150 people from across the city and district and includes parents and students. We had a great meeting last week, January 26th. A lot of really good, healthy engagement. I was probably most impressed by the parents and teachers that were there and how actively engaged they were in conversations at their tables. That work will be happening for the next 6 months, so that will keep us busy, he added. Murray will be giving the state of the school's message March 2nd, updating the community on the progress of the school district. That's a big deal, Murray said. Recently, the district organized an 8th grade course fair where middle school students got to see what was available for the high schools. 4 school board members are also up for election, May 6th. So far, incumbents Tammy Hawkins, position 6, Dennis Jones, position 7, and Donna Smith, position 3, have filed. Don Miller has filed for position 1, currently held by incumbent Carol Gregg. The filing deadline is February 17th. I thoroughly enjoy the 7 members of our Board of Trustees. They've done an exceptional job over the last 3.5 years that I've been here. Incredibly supportive, deeply engaged, care deeply about the kids that we have in this community. They also are not an agenda-driven as a board, Murray said. Their agenda is children, and that's a wonderful trait to have as a trustee, to serve because you care about kids. I think at the end of the day, when our trustees are running, they're able to stand on a solid foundation of success. That will certainly help them. We have a good team of 8 right now, he added. The Texas State Board of Education Friday reversed a previous vote by removing its recommendation to the legislature opposing private school vouchers. Governor Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick have said they are all in for vouchers. I think as a system, we certainly couldn't support anything that takes public school dollars away from public school kids. We have a responsibility to advocate for the 33,500 students that we serve. So anything that's going to cause harm to them, we would certainly be in opposition to that, Murray said. He said there seem to be a lot of words mixed in with the voucher discussion these days. I think when you use the word voucher, it certainly paints a clearer picture, and in many minds, that's a bad word because it removes public school dollars from public schools. So other words have been thrown in the mix that are perhaps a little bit more palatable. That has created a different kind of conversation for people, but at the end of the day, what's important for us as a local school district is that we do everything we can to protect the kids that we serve. Anything that's going to cause harm to our students, then we certainly need to be vocal about that. I think our parents in our community expect us to defend our children just like we expect parents in our community to defend kids as well, Murray said. One of the words being substituted for vouchers is choice. The Texas Tribune will host a live conversation on school choice February 16th in Austin. 4 leaders in Texas education, including Murray, Laura Colangelo, Executive Director, Texas Private Schools Association, Michelle Smith, Executive Director, Raise Your Hand, Texas, Randon Steinhauser, National School Choice Director, Young Americans for Liberty, and Brian Lopez, Public Education Reporter for the Texas Tribune, will be discussing school choice, what's right for Texas. The Tribune event is set for 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., free and in person at the Tribune Studio at 919 Congress Avenue on the 6th floor. It will also be live streamed at texastribune.org/events and then available for on-demand viewing afterward at texastribune.org. Murray added that ECISD is a district of choice as it has 14 choice schools, formerly known as magnets. Last year, we did a choice survey among all of our parents to find out what other options do they want. That's where our middle school program for IB, International Baccalaureate, came from, he said. People also wanted more science, technology, engineering, art, and math options. The STEM Academy is now a part of us. Again, another way to provide more choices and options for families. I think that's the power of public schools, is to continue to provide the right choices and options for the families that you serve. Those should continue to iterate over time as society continues to evolve. So should the choices that we provide for moms and dads, Murray said. On a separate topic, he said, all the human capital work ECISD has done will continue, even though Executive Director of Talent Development, Ashley Osborne, has moved to MISD. All of that human capital work that we're doing is critical, and we have to continue with all of that work because it has proven effective, Murray said. ECISD also lost Chief Innovation Officer Jason Osborne to SciGlass, a software firm whose software allows you to view your data in its actual 3 or 4D over time form through virtual reality, its website said. He said the position is undergoing reevaluation. We have not posted any positions in that area as we reevaluate what's going to be the most effective use of that role, Murray said. Asked if they were going to do away with the innovation department, Murray said, it's not going away. It's any time, you know, you have a vacancy, you always want to reevaluate it and figure out how we could make things better. We have two positions in human resources, and we have an EDL, Executive Director of Leadership, opening. With all of those, is there something that we could do to make it more effective? I think that's our opportunity. Sometimes organizations don't do that, so you miss out on an opportunity to level up because you hire the same. You do the same. We don't want to do that. We want to be better. I think that's also one reason we failed a change in education is because we just continue to do the same thing, so learn and become better, Murray said. The use of artificial intelligence in education has sparked a lot of chatter on social media. Murray said it's not being talked about enough. There are tiny conversations here and there, but we're not talking about artificial intelligence enough. It is going to be a game changer in education. ChatGPT is teaching us that already. So do we as educators harness the power of artificial intelligence, knowing it's a reality today? But tomorrow, there will be a whole other iteration of that. How do we equip our kids with the tools and skills they need to positively leverage the technology rather than misuse the technology? Because there are already conversations about banning ChatGPT from schools. That's not going to happen. We might ban it from the school, but the kids can go home and use it. So how do we help our kids use these powerful tools in constructive rather than destructive ways? That's our opportunity, Murray said. Odessa teens arrested on weapons charges. Two teenagers were arrested on weapons charges Sunday after an Odessa woman accused one of them of pointing a gun at her at an intersection. According to an Odessa Police Department report, the 27-year-old woman told officers she was stopped at East University Boulevard and North Grandview Avenue around 3 p.m. Sunday when the passenger of a Jeep Compass pointed a small silver gun toward her vehicle, causing her to fear for her safety and the safety of her children. An officer found the vehicle and stopped it in the 6200 block of Texas 191. A 14-year-old boy was inside the vehicle, along with the driver, Vicente Barraza, 17, and front seat passenger, Joe Angel Juarez, 18, the report stated. According to the report, officers found a loaded black 9mm Springfield Armory Hellcat semi-automatic handgun and an unloaded chrome and blue Raven P25 semi-automatic handgun in the Jeep. They also found a loaded black 9mm Polymer 80 semi-automatic handgun in Juarez's sweatpants. Officers also found less than 2 ounces of marijuana in a backpack in the rear passenger seat of the Jeep and a THC vape device in the possession of the 14-year-old, the report stated. Officers learned Springfield had been stolen out of a car earlier that day, the report stated. Barraza was arrested on suspicion of theft of a firearm, unlawful carrying of a weapon, and possession of marijuana. He was released from the Ector County Jail Monday after posting surety bonds totaling $6,500. Juarez was arrested on suspicion of theft of a firearm, unlawful carrying of a weapon, and deadly conduct. He was released from the Ector County Jail Monday after posting surety bonds totaling $8,000. According to OPD records, Juarez was also arrested in August. Undercover officers reported they had arranged to buy an ounce of marijuana from Juarez at a West 10th Street business on August 16th and watched Juarez and Jaziez Yanez, 17, blow through a stop sign while heading toward the business. The officers tried to pull the teenager's car over, but they evaded the officers. According to the report, Yanez crashed the car at 33rd Street and West County Road, and he and Juarez ran away, but they were apprehended a short time later. During a search of the car, officers found an ounce of marijuana, and during a search of a home on Noble, they found 5 clear baggies of marijuana and a THC cartridge, the report stated. Juarez was arrested on suspicion of evading arrest, delivery of marijuana, tampering with physical evidence, and possession of a controlled substance, more than 1 gram, less than 4 grams. Yanez was arrested on suspicion of 2 counts of evading in a motor vehicle, evading arrest, and leaving the scene of an accident, causing $200 or more in damage. Ultimately, both teenagers were indicted on the evading arrest charge alone. Yanez pleaded guilty and was placed on 3 years deferred adjudication January 18th. Juarez's case is still pending. Obituary published in the Odessa American, Sunday, February 5th. Wesley Addison Wes Henry, Odessa. Wesley Addison Henry passed away on January 31st in Odessa. He was 85 years old. He was born in Pampa, Texas on March 26th, 1937, to Joe and Vera Henry. He married Lola Mae Hamilton on November 30th, 1956, in Loco, Oklahoma. He was preceded in death by his parents, Vera and Joe Henry, and 2 sisters, Wanda Hughes and Catherine Saunders. He is survived by his wife Lola, 2 sons, Larry and wife Robin of Brownwood, Paul and wife Tammy of Odessa, and 3 grandsons, Dr. Robert Wadley and wife Sandra of Maumel, Arkansas, Tyler Henry and wife Amy of Odessa, and Tanner Henry of Odessa, and 2 great-grandchildren, plus numerous nieces and nephews. A memorial service will be held Monday, February 6th at 10 a.m. at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Odessa, with Landon Coleman officiating. Death notices from Sunday. Ronald Lee Brown, Midland. Ronald Lee Brown, 76, died Thursday, February 2nd in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Samuel Lee Roberts, Midland. Samuel Lee Roberts, 64, died Monday, January 30th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, February 6th. Wolfcamp Project nets national award. The story was written by Alida Escarciga, special to the OA from UTPB. Amy Kim, UT Permian Basin's lecturer and gallery director, is the recipient of the 2022 Texas Photographic Society National Photography Award for her collaborative work titled Wolfcamp Catalog. The Texas Photographic Society, or TPS, is a nationally and internationally recognized nonprofit organization that celebrates the photographic arts. TPS provides programs and services for photographers and their audiences across the country. It also has a national and international membership. Quote, there is no better feeling. Juror Marnie Schindelman, Associate Professor of Photography, University of Georgia, told me that it was an honor to select my work. TPS CEO Ann Shaw said they've been getting nothing but rave reviews for the exhibition. There isn't a greater compliment than these. It motivates me to keep at it, says Amy. The TPS award selection begins with a blind jury process. Amy said she submitted Wolfcamp's catalog to have the opportunity of having a solo exhibition at PhotoFest Biennial in Houston. Among the 10 finalists, Amy's work received the ultimate award. In 2021, Amy met with Dr. Michael Zavada, chair of the Geosciences Department at UTPB, regarding a photo series she was working on about the Wolfcamp Shale in the Permian Basin. Wolfcamp is a geologic formation that is important to oil production, and it is found in the Permian Basin. From that point forward, the collaboration between the two departments intensified. Geology faculty spent hours assisting Amy with discipline-specific questions and donating the precious core samples for the exhibition. Once completed, Wolfcamp catalog was first showcased at the 5th Annual Geoscience Symposium in the spring of 2022. Quote, "Those that attended the symposium were treated to different ways of looking at the same thing, how geoscientists view the Permian Basin and seeing the basin through the eyes of an artist," said Dr. Zavada. "The goal of this collaboration was to once again affirm the necessity of creativity to all human activity, which has its nascent roots in both sciences and humanities, art. We believe it to be an award-winning success," end quote. Assisting Amy and Dr. Zavada, collaborators on this project also included Sumit Verma, Miles Henderson, Robert Trentum, Mohammed Zoba, and June Howell. Contributions from IT, College of Engineering, and graduate students in the Geosciences Department made this project an even bigger success. This project was also supported by the UTPB Office of Research and Sponsored Programs and the College of Arts and Sciences. Amy Kim is a faculty member and gallery director at UTPB's Department of Art. In her 4 years here, she has taught digital photography, new media, art appreciation, and gallery apprenticeship. She holds a Master of Fine Arts in Photography from Texas Tech University and a second Master of Fine Arts in Art Administration, also from Texas Tech. Amy has exhibited at the CICA Museum in Seoul, South Korea, in Pingyao, China, and all across the United States. Her book chapter, Photographic Arts and Fake News, was published in Teaching About Fake News, published by the Association of College and Research Libraries. An American-born Korean, Amy has lived in Michigan, South Korea, France, and now Texas. Quote, "I anticipate that this project will open more doors. The work is being well received in Houston, and I had productive conversations with international curators and fellow lens-based artists. I love being a photographic artist, and I hope to be a role model for our students for showing and exhibiting artwork in the competitive contemporary art landscape," Amy Kim. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Hope for the Homeless. Curbside Bistro and West Texas Food Bank have scheduled a Hope for the Homeless event from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. February 6th. Participants will get a free hot meal by Curbside Bistro, a free box of food from West Texas Food Bank, and a free haircut. For more information, call 432-368-0240 or 432-559-2531. Let's draw with Orlando Medellin. The Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled an art workshop with local artist Orlando Medellin from 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. February 6th. There will be a mix of classic art with manga and comic book art. All supplies are included. Visit tinyurl.com/2xcwmj9z. Volunteers needed. Medical Center Hospital is in need of volunteers for its volunteer services. Applications may be found online. Visit tinyurl.com/yfjjmyhc. Odessa Regional Medical Center needs auxiliary volunteers. The auxiliary is open to men and women of all ages. For online registration form, visit odessaregionalmedicalcenter.org/volunteer. Meals on Wheels of Odessa needs volunteers. Volunteer opportunities, drivers, kitchen staff, and Mudbug fundraising. To sign up or for more information, call 432-333-6451, email volunteer@mowodessa.com, or visit mowodessa.com. The West Texas Food Bank needs volunteers. Volunteer activities include assembling pantry boxes, assembling senior boxes, assembling food to kids' backpacks, sorting and processing donated items, sorting and processing produce, distributing food in our drive-through pantry, distributing food on a mobile outreach, and helping the garden team in the XTO Energy Innovative Gardens. All volunteers, regardless of age, are required to register through the WTF Volunteer Hub. Dress appropriately and comfortably. No spaghetti strap shirts, short shorts, leggings, or clothes that are revealing. Also, closed-toe shoes only. No flip-flops, sandals, or heels are allowed in the warehouse for safety purposes. For more information or registering a group, email Volunteer Coordinator Cinda Garcia at cgarcia@wtxfoodbank.org. To register, visit tinyurl.com/mukxdvyf.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. NAC supplement can help curb cravings to smoke. Dear Dr. Roach, I'd like to have your thoughts on what value the NAC supplement may have for reducing cravings for marijuana or nicotine. I'm 73 and have been smoking marijuana daily since I was 21. Now I'm quitting for health reasons. I've been taking 1,000 milligrams of NAC every morning. As I've read, it helps with smoking cravings. It also seems to be used for anxiety and other mental health issues, lung and heart problems. The list goes on. I'm not going to smoke anymore, but I'm just wondering what your take is on this, as I'm thinking of sending it to my 38-year-old son, who's been addicted to vaping and cigarettes since he was a young man. He has ADD, anxiety, and problems with breath capacity, and he may have heart problems as well. He's smoking to relieve the ADD and anxiety, and of course, he'd like to quit, but it's hard to do so. Can the NAC supplement help me with the urge to smoke? I think it has reduced the cravings, but how would I even know? Answer. N-acetylcysteine, a precursor to the amino acid cysteine, has several roles in medicine, as you say. When inhaled, it breaks up mucus, which helps people cough out thick sputum. When used intravenously, it's a specific antidote to acetaminophen, Tylenol, overdose. It has been used in these capacities for years and is safe and well tolerated. But in addition, there are data that show that oral NAC, sold as a dietary supplement, may have a role in helping people overcome addictions to tobacco, with small trials showing a reduction in smoking and the relapse rate in people using NAC compared with placebo. In people who want to reduce their cannabis use, most of the data on NAC has been on younger people, adolescents and young adults, but also show some benefit. More stringent trials are ongoing. It is very difficult for a single person, patient or physician, to tell whether it's a real effect or a placebo effect that is causing the reduction in cravings. Only large-scale placebo-controlled trials can show with confidence whether the treatment is more effective than a placebo. But since the supplement is inexpensive and highly safe, and since a third-party lab found that the brands of NAC sold at reputable stores are what they say they are, I say it might be helpful. One nightstand leads to awkward social situation. Dear Abby, published Saturday, February 4th. Dear Abby, during a trip to Las Vegas, I kind of had a one-night stand. I'm in a relationship. I felt bad afterward. Problem is, I started having feelings for this guy, Leo. We would message back and forth, more on my end than his. I guess you could say I was hung up on him. I have since mended my relationship with my partner. My issue is, Leo is best friends with my best friend's husband. When he visits, I am excluded, which means I can't hang out with her. I tell her we are all adults, we are not in high school, and can be in the same room with each other. It's not fair to me. Are my feelings justified? Feeling shunned on the West Coast. Dear feeling, this isn't all about your feelings. You stated that you feel you can be in the same room with your best friend, her husband, and Leo socially. Hasn't it occurred to you that Leo may not be as open-minded about that fling as you are? Seeing you may make him feel guilty. This may not be a case of what happens in Vegas, not only not staying in Vegas, but also having repercussions. See your best friend when Leo isn't around. Dear Abby, last year, my dear hubby went to the doctor for back pain. Within a week, he had been diagnosed with incurable cancer. He's in treatment, and we hope he will have a long remission, but it has been a very stressful year filled with health issues. I am now due for my annual checkup, and I'm extremely anxious about it. I'm no spring chicken. I have some issues, high blood pressure, overweight, and I'm terrified she will tell me something awful is wrong. I have been crying for a week now, and I'm almost to the point of canceling my appointment. How do I overcome this extreme anxiety? Fearing the worst in Ohio. Dear Fearing, you may be having extreme anxiety because, with a sick husband, you are living with extreme pressure. Pick up that phone, tell your physician exactly what's going on, and ask her to prescribe something to calm your nerves before your appointment. Under no circumstances should you cancel it because you are afraid of what you might hear. If anything is wrong, it's important to nip it in the bud before it progresses. Dear Abby, I have been on phone calls recently with a married friend when the spouse will suddenly chime in without my knowing they were listening. There are times when I want a conversation to be private with only one person. What's a polite way to make this happen in a world of speaker phones? Confidential in Indiana. Dear Confidential, the way to handle it is to tell the married person you would like to know if someone is within earshot because you want your conversation to be private, and if it happens again, convey sensitive information to that person only face-to-face.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.